Today, Bye Bye Pivot, market update for the 3rd of September 2022. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Well, this past week has seen a significant shift in market sentiment, driven off the back of hawkish tones from Jackson Hole. A central bank has underscored that squashing inflation was their main task, whatever the cost. Markets had been betting on a Fed pivot soon, recalling the last cycle where markets had their way and the Fed turned, hence the bear market run-up in the past couple of months. But that, for now, is all in tatters. Further falls into a typically wobbly September can be expected. Mind you, the Fed has not explained why their forecasts were so off, so it does beg the question as to whether we should believe them now. And also consider this, the wider fallout globally, as higher rates and a strong dollar will put many markets and countries under pressure. Note the swing between the US dollar and the yuan, and the US dollar and the yen. Perhaps this is not all accidental. Plus, the markets are worried about China slowing, a Eurozone recession risk, as well as the hawkish Fed. Equity funds recorded the fourth largest weekly outflow of 2022, while bond funds saw investors pull money out for a second straight week, according to Bank of America analysts. In the weekly review of investment flows, Bank of America said cash expanded by $4.8 billion US, gold shed $900 million, bonds bled $4.2 billion, and stocks lost $9.4 billion, so people are running for the exits. As one sign of confusion in markets, Bank of America said that the last week marked the largest outflow of US equities in 10 weeks at $6.1 billion, while at the same time it marked the largest inflow to tech since April 22 at $1.5 billion. However, today we sum up the week as a brief rally in world stocks flagged on Friday morning, while the US dollar retreated from a 24-year high on the yen. The Dow fell to its third weekly loss on Friday, as fresh worries of an energy crisis in Europe hitting global growth offset data pointing to a stronger than expected US labour market, but that won't be enough to deter the Fed's aggressive interest rate hikes. News that Russia has scrapped a Saturday deadline to resume flows via the Nord Stream gas supply route to Germany, deepening Europe's difficulties in securing winter fuel, further soured sentiment in the US, and that's of course ahead of the long Labor Day weekend. Definitely, the afternoon overshadowed the good data from this morning. This afternoon has been stolen from us by those headlines out of Europe, said Zach Hill, head of portfolio management at Horizon Investments. Analysts also pointed to thin trading volumes ahead of the extended holiday weekend, and that helped to exaggerate market moves. The US data showed that US employers hired more workers than expected in August, but moderate wage growth and a rise in the unemployment rate to 3.7%. Non-farm payrolls increased 315,000 last month, following a revised 526,000 advance in July, and the unemployment rate unexpectedly rose to a six-month high of 3.7%. That's the first increase since January, as the participation rate climbed. The Labour Department's report also showed the average work week was down slightly to 34.5 hours, and the number of people not in the labour force who currently want a job fell by 361,000 in August. That's the biggest decline in a year, suggesting solid wage growth and high inflation are driving people to look for work. Other recent labour market data also painted a strong picture, with job openings up to 11.2 million in July, while applications for unemployment insurance last week dropped for a third consecutive week to a two-month low. This initially cheered investors and helped the S&P 500 zoom higher, but then some analysts said the latest job data kept alive the debate about whether the Fed will raise interest rates by 50 basis points later this year or 75. We continue to expect the Fed to hike by 50 basis points in September and November. This report contains enough good news for the Fed, said Bank of America. But hawkish remarks from Secretary of Treasury Janet Yellen on Friday after the jobs data, where she was quoted as saying that US inflation remained too high and that it is the Fed's job to bring it down, dampened the initial euphoria. And former Treasury Secretary Lawrence Summers discounted any optimism over an influx of people into the US labour force in August, focusing instead on the inflationary potential of continued strong employment gains. The market is laser-focused on how aggressive the Fed is going to be with its hiking cycle, said Giles Coughlan, chief currency analyst at HYCM, adding that expectations for higher rates have solidified since the speech last week by Fed Chair Jerome Powell at the Jackson Hole Central Banking Conference. So, early gains reversed into losses over the day, hounded by concerns that the 75 basis point rate hike was still on the cards. The S&P 500 fell 1.07% to 3,924, now below the 4,000 floor notice, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 1.07% to 31,318, while the Nasdaq Composite dropped 1.31% to 11,630. Chartists are now looking at the latest downside trends, which suggests significant further falls, but we'll see. The Volatility Index was at 25.47. Meta Platforms slipped 3.05% to lead big tech lower, with Apple, Microsoft, and Alphabet all down more than 1%. And chip stocks also slid into the red, though losses were kept in check by a climb in Broadcom. The chip maker delivered upbeat guidance after reporting quarterly results that topped Wall Street estimates on both the top and bottom lines, and that was led by strength in its semiconductor business. Sentiment on chip makers has been soured by deteriorating global growth that's expected to hit demand, but Broadcom could weather the storm, quote, better than most due to a consistent scrubbing of backlog, long lead times on non-cancelled orders, and heavy infrastructure exposure, Deutsche Bank said in the note. All three main indices suffered their third straight weekly loss as the Dow fell 2.99%, the S&P 500 declined 3.29%, and the Nasdaq dropped 4.21%. The focus now shifts to the August consumer price report due mid-month. That'll be the last major piece of data available before the Fed's 2021 policy meeting. The dollar index, which measures its performance against a basket of six currencies, was flat at 109.61 after hitting a 20-year high in the previous session. A pause in the dollar's ascent helped the euro to bounce 0.1% to 0.9955. In the bond markets, the yield on benchmark US 2-year notes fell to 3.3955 after hitting a 14-year high of 3.5510 on Thursday. And the yield on the US 10-year bond fell to 3.1950, but it's still inverted in a recessionary signal. Oil prices recovered much of their recent losses on expectations that OPEC Plus will discuss output cuts at a meeting on September the 5th, although concern over China's COVID-19 curbs and weak global growth did continue to limit gains. Brent crude futures rose 1% to $93.26 a barrel, while US West Texas Intermediate crude was up by 0.74% to $87.25. A softer dollar boosted spot gold, which rose 0.78% to $1,733. And for the current week itself, December gold was down 1.6%, adding to the back-to-back slide of 0.7% and 2.9% over the last couple of weeks. Gold futures have also fallen 6 months in a row since its last positive close of $1,954 back in January, losing almost 12% in that stretch. Gold is breathing a huge sigh of relief after the August job numbers that helped it close above the previously broken support of $1,700, said Craig Earlham, analyst at online trading platform Onya. Over in Europe, stocks rallied off Thursday's 6 weeks lows, with the DAX in Germany up 3.33% to 13,050, the CAC 40 in France up 2.21% to 6,167, while Britain's FTSE jumped 1.89% to 7,281. But fears of a recession are increasing, with a survey showing on Thursday that manufacturing activity across the Eurozone declined again last month as consumers feel the pinch from a deepening cost of living crisis, and they cut spending. The European Central Bank is also expected to lift its interest rate next week. With record high inflation fast approaching double digits, the question is whether the central bank will go for a 50 basis point hike, as it did in July, or an even larger move. Consumer prices in the 19-nation currency block jumped 9.1% from a year ago in August. Stripping out those drivers, a gauge of underlying inflation inched up to a fresh high of 4.3%, highlighting how price pressures continue to become more broad-based. Almost half the eurozone is suffering inflation of over 10%. The pressure on the ECB is mounting, said Martin Morrison, European economist at DWS. The ECB will continue hiking rates at an accelerated pace and will send a hawkish message, said Nerdris Makulis, an economist at Swedbank. It needs to repair its reputation and to be able to claim victory once inflation starts retreating. We even expect the ECB to outright recognise that the economy is now entering a recession, but that it will continue to hike regardless. The question now is whether the data is enough to nudge the ECB towards the 75 basis point rate hike that some of its 25-strong governing council want debated. It's an increment that's been deployed twice already by the Federal Reserve, although dovish ECB officials caution against following suit as Europe braces for a recession. Given the Jackson Hole context, the ECB will likely look past the threat of a looming recession in the 90-member euro area to prioritise the struggle with soaring prices. A three-quarter point hike, now as also seen by money markets, would align the ECB more closely with the Federal Reserve, which has already delivered two increases of that magnitude. German 10-year bond yields hovered at 1.5065%. That's near recent two-month highs, as expectations grow of that 75 basis point hike next week. Europe's energy crisis is likely to prompt a surge in zombie firms across key Eurozone economies, with UK companies looking particularly vulnerable, according to Bank of America. Sterling credit looks particularly vulnerable to Europe's energy crisis amid UK policy uncertainty ahead of the upcoming selection of Britain's Prime Minister. The number of UK company insolvencies rose to 1,827 in August. That's a 70% year-over-year jump, contributing to a large share of Europe's new zombies, according to their analysis. A growing number of firms are slowing or halting production in the face of surging energy costs as Russia squeezes gas deliveries and power plant outages further sap supply. That's a sign that more zombies, which refer to companies that aren't earning enough to cover their interest expenses, have emerged in Europe in the last quarter, halting a post-COVID decline. Now, over in Asia, markets were mixed, with Japan's Nikkei 225 steady at 27,650, the Korean Kospi down 0.26% to 2,409, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.74% to 19,452. The Shanghai Composite was slightly higher, ending at 3,187, but MSCI's broadest index of Asia-Pacific shares outside Japan fell 0.6%, heading for its worst weekly performance since mid-June, with a tumble of 3.6%. The dollar, the beneficiary of rising interest rates, hit a fresh 24-year high against the yen at 140.80, triggering a warning by Japan's finance minister of appropriate action to curb the volatility. By midday in New York, the yen had pulled back to 140.18. China's economy is bracing for more pain as the lockdown of megacity Chengdu in the west of the country damages business and consumer activity in the area and hurts sentiment more broadly across the nation. The southwestern Chinese center of Chengdu on Thursday announced a lockdown of its 21.2 million residents, while the technology hub of Shenzhen also rolled out new social distancing rules as more Chinese cities tried to battle recurring COVID-19 outbreaks. We maintain the view that China will keep its zero COVID policy until March 2023, when the leadership reshuffle is fully completed, but we now expect a slower pace of easing of the zero COVID policy after March 2023, said analysts at Nomura. COVID hotspots are shifting away from several remote regions and cities with seemingly less economic significance to the country to provinces that matter much more to China's national economy, they said. The lockdown of the city of 21 million people, which will last at least 4 days but could be extended if more COVID cases are discovered, will likely result in a slump in retail and restaurant spending, and it could also force factories and companies to shut if staff can't go to work. Chengdu's economy makes up 1.7% of China's national gross domestic product and is the sixth largest city after Beijing and Shanghai. China's ruling Communist Party finally gave the date for its twice-a-decade leadership congress, and it probably won't come soon enough for a nation mired in COVID limbo. Besides the high probability that President Xi Jinping will be handed a president-breaking third term at the week-long congress, which kicks off on October the 16th, the event will also be scrutinised for signs of whether he plans to ease the COVID-zero policy that kept deaths low but triggered anger and economic hardship. Now, over in Australia, Australian shares nudged 0.25% lower on Friday to 6,826, making the worst week since mid-June with a 3.9% decline. The materials sector was the biggest loser, down 1.9%, with miners suffering another battering on mounting concerns about demand as top steel producer China battles those fresh COVID-19 outbreaks. Rio Tinto and Fortescue Metal both fell 2.5% to $90.19 and $17.20 respectively, while BHP Group shed 2.05% to $36.74. No surprise given the weaker iron ore price, with prices below $100 at $96.29, thanks to weaker demand from China expected ahead and the broad economic slowdown. Tech stocks also came under pressure as Tyro payments tumbled 9.7% to 98 cents, while WiseTech dropped 2.1% to $57.06. The financial sector was the biggest outperformer, and all the big banks headed higher. CBA was up 0.94% to 96.95. Westpac rose 0.8% to 21.40. NAB lifted 0.79% to 30.54, and ANZ rose 0.49% to 22.75. Macquarie rose 1.58% to 177.20. But AMP declined 1.72% to 1.145% after losing the management rights of its $2.7 billion commercial property fund to an external entity. The deal is expected to shave up to $50 million off AMP's expected earnings from its blockbuster Collimate Capital sale to Dexus. Dexus shares eked out a 0.5% gain to $8.50. James Hardie edged up 0.1% to $33.24, and Evolution Mining lost 1.4% to $2.16 after both companies appointed new chief executives. EML Payments, Life360, PointsBet and Zipco are all being relegated from the S&P/ASX 200 in the September rebalance of Australia's benchmark equity index. The once high-flying stocks are joined by AZV Minerals, City Chic Collective and Janus Henderson. AVZ is still suspended from trading. Promoted to the top flight are Capricorn Metals, Charter Hall Social Infrastructure, REIT, James Ling, Karoon Energy, Smart Group, Spark New Zealand, and Sayona Mining. The shakeup also means Tabcorp leaves the top 100 and is replaced by SCA Property Group. After a better expected result and an unexpected buyback, EML shares were again whacked late last month when it uncovered fraudulent activity in a newly acquired business. The issue involving a set of fraudulent merchants within Sentinel's direct debit processing business sunk EML shares, and they fell more than 40% on the news, and they last traded at 87 cents. Zip shares closed out August more than 34% lower as concerns about growth in a rising interest rate environment weighed heavily. It was last at 86 cents. One thing to note in Australia is the swathe of share buybacks, which companies have announced as part of their reporting season. The AFR had a helpful table showing some of the main contenders. Mining and energy producers, flush with windfall profits from surging oil, gas and coal prices, are executing some of the biggest buybacks, while other corporates rolling in cash from pandemic-era cheap money and stimulus are buying back their own shares. In Australia, companies are incentivized to pay dividends because of the franking system, and that's partly why payout ratios are much higher than in the US, said Shane Oliver, AMP Capital's chief economist. If you increase dividends, you can create an expectation that you can continue doing that, whereas if you do a buyback, it doesn't create future expectations. According to Oliver, about 45% of ASX companies increased dividends in August, which is down on the past two stimulus-fueled semi-annual reporting seasons that benefited from COVID-19 turnarounds. Veteran investor, company director and former Rothschild managing director David Kingston said, "Australian boards should follow corporate America's preference for buybacks. I'm a huge fan of buybacks, and I think it absolutely adds shareholder value. It's a deficiency of Australian companies not to use them more often, he said. Everyone respects the great Warren Buffett, and Berkshire has been buying back around $25 billion US per annum. Buffett would say, I know my own shares better than anyone, and if I can buy them at a discount to what they're worth, that's better than wasting the money. He's extremely smart, and he's been buying back lots of shares and sitting on lots of cash through the cycle. However, the capital allocation practice remains politically controversial, as left-wing Democrat US politicians such as Elizabeth Warren insist buybacks are a form of market manipulation to inflate executive pay. Executives often have long-term remuneration targets linked to earnings per share growth rates or share price appreciation. If a company uses free cash flow to reduce shares on issue rather than reinvest in the business or headcount, future earnings per share will rise. That improves the prospect of achieving defined incentive targets. A buyback could be an effort to get the share price up, said Dr. Oliver. Often leadership teams and CEOs are incentivized with their remuneration schemes to get the share price up. They might say, it's unfair to say, but the reality is that's what they often do and often why they do it. It potentially increases their longer-term remuneration. Australian companies that pay tax can declare dividends with franking credits attached, but when a company may not have sufficient franking credits available, a buyback is a better use of capital. Off-market share buybacks, such as those offered by Woolworths and Commonwealth Bank, may also attach franking credits, which are typically beneficial to tax-free retirees below the $1.7 million superannuation cap. And finally, in crypto, with risk-off being the name of the game, both Bitcoin and Ether remains in low-ball territory. Bitcoin was last down at 19,979, down 0.56%, while Ether was down 0.67% to 1,572. Now, there was speculation if Bitcoin could defend $20,000 US, then it might rally. Well, it failed that test. Bitcoin fell below 20,000, actually, for the last six consecutive trading sessions. That's the longest stretch of days that it's dipped under the closely watched level since the crypto market was rocked by turmoil back in July. Crypto sector has contracted to less than $1 trillion, or about a third of its all-time market value, which was reached in November. After coming off those highs amid a general increase in risk aversion, coin prices were rocked mid-year by the collapse of the Terra ecosystem and the demise of Three Arrows Capital and the bankruptcy of broker Voyager and other lender Celsius. There is a lot of fear that if we make new lows on Bitcoin as a proxy for the market, there will be another wave of, said the chief executive, FRNT Financial. The decline on the first day of September doesn't bode well for the bellwether coin either. The ninth month of the year historically being one of the worst for Bitcoin, which has fallen every September since 2017. Bitcoin, in fact, has averaged an 8.5% drop for the month over the past 5 years, according to Bespoke Investment Group. Though bullish market participants say the price decline is already being viewed as a buying opportunity for some investors. So standing back, expect more falls. We are going to, I think, see a very uncomfortable ride for the next couple of months. Inflation is still not under control. Interest rates are going up. And all sectors of the markets are now in the spotlight. There is nowhere to hide, apart from perhaps going to cash. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.